Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne and you join us on this post-Champions League morning. Before we get started, don't forget to check out our Extra Tyne service where subscribers can pay for ad-free versions of our shows or for added delightful, delicious, or in this case, desperate content as Chris and Luke Edwards pick apart what proved to be a chastening night at Camp Nou. For more details, please visit podonthetyne.supportandcast.fm. Today, I'm joined by the tapas muncher Chris Woff and the lesser spotted George Culkin. How are we both? George, how are you? Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I had a few days off. Returned to... I don't know. What have I returned to?
A bin fire, I believe.
A bin fire. Barcelona bin fire.
Everything's on fire.
What an extraordinary game that was. A lot to talk about. So, yeah, let's get on with it.
Yes. Chris, how are you?
Yes, I'm all right, thank you. Barcelona itself is lovely. Camp Nou was very breezy and quite odd being a bit of a building site. And, yeah, my overriding memory of that will just be the entirety of the second half, just thinking, let this game be over now. Once the Mexican wave started, it was just like, this is the pit.
Can I posit a theory, right? I mean, how the referee only saw fit to add whatever it was, 9 seconds, 19. Now, you could argue that was a mercy killing at that point. But is there not a claim? I mean, the current climate and what's happened this week with the African Cup of Nations, can Newcastle not submit an official complaint and be awarded this tie 3-0.
We could have scored a goal each minute.
I think we could.
Could have been back in the game.
I think it's an injustice. Court of arbitration. Let's head there.
Absolutely. Chris has just informed us that there's every chance he gets kicked out of his hotel room in the middle of this recording as well. So it just adds a nice element of jeopardy, doesn't it, to the recording. We'll just see how it feels. A frisson, a little spark, a bit of excitement.
Yeah, if I'm 7-2 down, I can just leave. So that's the positive.
Right then, headlines in 30 seconds or less, Christopher Woff.
That's your official warning.
Here we go. Newcastle depart the Champions League in embarrassing fashion come the end, but Sunderland await.
Yes, Newcastle United lost 7-2 on the night, 8-3 on aggregate to Barcelona in the round of 16. They are out of all cup competitions now, but they have 8 league games remaining, the first of which is the first time we are derby in a decade at St James's Park on Sunday. Absolutely huge.
George Corgan, the Lasses beat promotion rivals.
2-0 to Newcastle against Birmingham at Gateshead. A great result. Goals from Jordan Nobbs and Beth Lumsden. And it means that the gap to automatic promotion spots is now just 2 points with 5 games left.
And Christopher, finally, Sandro Tonali's agent has let his mouth run again and the Italian is a doubt for the derby.
Yeah, I mean, Bruno Guimaraes has been linked to Manchester United heavily again this morning, which we're checking out at the minute. It seems every Newcastle player is being touted out somewhere at the moment. Yeah, Sandro Tonali's agent talking about, basically describing Newcastle as a stepping stone club. Newcastle are playing that down and saying that he hasn't at all himself showed that he wants to go elsewhere. But for this weekend, Tonali went off with a groin problem and Howe says he's a doubt. So that would be a big concern given Bruno Guimaraes himself is obviously out of that game anyway.
Oh, joy of joys. Right then, let's get into it, chaps.
Oh, what a giveaway that is. Right, Rafinha. And Barcelona now, 7-2 up.
I'm going to start with a deeply technical question. So naturally, I'm going to come to you for this one, George Culkin. What the fuck just happened?
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. The man for the tactics, the technical side of the game, that is. Well, I mean, obviously, just to go into massive depth about this, what happened, Taylor, was that Newcastle United happened. And Newcastle United has been happening since 1892, I think the official stats say, ruining everybody's life since then on a regular basis.
Yeah.
No reason that they should change now. I mean, I don't know what the XG shows on ruining lives and things like that. But that was quite a night. And it's a strange thing where two things can be true, that Newcastle United were pretty good for 3/4 of two legs against mighty Barcelona, one of the great powerhouses of the world game. They held their own, arguably the better team, and yet they've been absolutely decimated and humiliated and embarrassed according to that scoreline. So it's quite difficult to say what happened, but we do know what's about to happen, and that is Sunderland. And so there is very little time and opportunity for people to feel sorry for themselves or lick their wounds. I mean, we'll try and get into it, and we'll try and sort of unpick what happened. But for all that the first half was really exciting and great and compelling last night, the second was an absolute horror show.
It certainly was. The annoying thing as well. Well, the encouraging thing? No, the annoying thing. It's that Newcastle fought back twice as well, didn't they?
Yeah, and I mean, I'll just take this on as well. I mean, I was looking at the stats. Chris was in the stadium working away. I was trying my best to sort of help him and throw some stuff his way, and I think I ended up massively confusing him. I know this isn't really the story of the match because Newcastle, as you say, had to kind of come back twice, but teams don't go to Barcelona and score twice. You know, I know it doesn't, you know, two goals, it's not kind of outlandish, but the only other teams to score two away goals at Barcelona this season, nobody scored more than that. It's Sevilla in La Liga, it's Real Madrid in the Spanish Super Cup, and it's PSG in the Champions League.
It was Sevilla last night.
It was certainly Sevilla last night. Oh, that's good, Chris. It's not like you, to be funny.
Hey, someone's on fire this morning.
So in the first game, Newcastle have held Barcelona to a draw and they've scored against them. And in the second game, they've scored two goals at Camp Nou. And I suppose the only reason why I'm pointing that out is that it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In La Liga, Barcelona have only conceded eight goals at home this season. And so Newcastle have done something quite unusual last night. But for all the encouragement you take from that, like, resilience, from them scoring goals, you know, my God.
In any other context, it would be a bit of an achievement, wouldn't it? That's the thing.
Well, yeah. But like, the other thing is that Barcelona scored seven goals. And that is the only time that Barcelona have scored that many goals this season.
First time Newcastle conceded seven since Arsenal, December 2012.
Oh, remember it
well. But in terms of the encouraging thing, yeah, the first half was very encouraging. And it was frustrating because I don't know how it necessarily came across on the TV, but the gaps in behind, particularly Barcelona's fullbacks, who were they were terrified of Alanga. Yeah. They were terrified of Hall and Barnes, who I thought in the first half in attack were excellent, linked up so well. They were involved in, basically those three were involved in both of the goals. Newcastle carved out good opportunities himself. Gordon had one in the near post. Gordon also had a one where Alanga was actually offside beforehand, but Newcastle had got him behind again. It was frustrating. Maybe he was offside because he didn't need to be. But Newcastle had showed the way. They had that sort of blueprint, but they were having to do it from a position of being behind because they had allowed Barcelona to too easily score those goals. That's what's frustrating, is you have a side who are free scoring, not to the level of usually scoring seven, but are free scoring anyway. But Newcastle were handing them the goals and then having to fight back. So it's like that Newcastle were never ahead in a game where for the first 45 minutes, or 40 minutes maybe, I think you can argue they shaded it. Barcelona had other opportunities at the other end as well. I'm not saying that it was just one-way traffic in the first half, but it was very open, and that suited Newcastle. I think it is encouraging to see that they can do that, and for Alanga, we have to hope that this is a real turning point. We've mentioned it so many times, but the sliding doors moment of the opening game of the season, if he scores inside 2 minutes, does his Newcastle career start off in very different fashion?
Yeah.
Arguably his best three games for Newcastle have all come against Barcelona. And I think that that's, in one sense, a positive because it shows you can do against the best sides. But on the other hand, it's a bit of a concern because most of the Premier League games Newcastle will play will not be against sides who play with such a high line. And the difficulty for him is to translate that into making sure that he can play against low blocks, that he can take on his man, that he can cross front and play. But for him, he just has to take such confidence from that, because I think in knockout Champions League games, there's only three or four players in history who've actually scored a brace for a visiting side at Camp Nou, and now Antti Alanga is one of them.
Yeah, I think the first player for an English team to have done that, which is an achievement. So, yeah, it's only 2 months ago that Eddie Howe was calling on Newcastle fans to show Alanga some love, you know, about creating a safe space for players at St James's, that kind of thing. And that did have an impact. Newcastle fans did respond to that. And I think in turn, Alanga has responded to that. He's been emotionally lifted. He's been encouraged by that. And if we're looking at positives to take from that game, then he has to be one of them to have had that impact on the biggest stage. You know, that should fill him with confidence moving forward. And hopefully this is the sign of, you know, the player that Newcastle thought they had signed. Let's not forget, like, there have been times at this season when he's barely looked like a footballer, but he looked like a footballer last night.
He did. What did we make of the way Newcastle set up, Chris? I mentioned in the last leg, Newcastle were brave against Barcelona at home. Maybe slightly naive this time around.
Well, I think it was both. And I think that I'm torn on this because It was before the match. I was speaking to Paul Ballous, who is one of our Barcelona reporters, in the ground, and I was sort of, it was about half an hour before kickoff, and I was sort of saying, how do you feel about this game? And he said, most Barcelona fans feel pretty confident about it. I feel pretty confident about it. And he said, that's not necessarily disrespect to Newcastle. That's because at Camp Nou, Barcelona are very, very good. It's a big pitch. Teams come here and they tend to get blown away. But also, he said, most teams come here and they're set up with a low block. They try and defend deep. They don't go toe-to-toe, Barcelona. But that's exactly what Newcastle did. And I think that's why Barcelona was so unsettled, because A, it was alien to them for a team or most teams to come there and actually approach the game in that way on their turf. But B, because Newcastle were getting joy out of it, and they did look so unsettled. There were gaps everywhere. The problem, I think, with going man-to-man with Barcelona and that pitch and that amount of space is, at some stage, Newcastle were going to tire. And even before we come on to the psychological collapse, defensive collapse of the second half, someone at a European club messaged me last night, and he sort of said, the problem is that eventually the ball travels faster than players and the ball doesn't get tired. And that's eventually, Hansi Flick said after the game, he basically said that, I said to the players at half-time, keep doing what you're doing, we will get at Newcastle, because their gaps will appear.
Yeah.
Now, you can look at it in one sense and say, well, but Newcastle, there weren't necessarily the gaps except the ones that Newcastle afforded them in the first half. But at the same time, Newcastle went in behind already and they were already fatigued after 45 minutes. And I think the psychological blow of conceding the penalty just on half time, then conceding early in the second half, it meant that the fatigue that probably was already setting into the legs, I think, also became mental fatigue. And so in that sense, I think it was probably the way Newcastle had to try and approach the game to win it. But it was maybe a 2 in 50 chance of that working over 90 minutes against Barcelona. And unfortunately, it only worked for 45.
I suppose if we take a step back and we go back to how we felt before the match started, it was always a tall order for Newcastle to get through against a very, very good Barcelona side. So that's your starting point. Now, after the match, Chris and I were also chatting to Dermot Corrigan, who's The Athletic's Spanish football reporter, and he talked about Newcastle creating more problems for Barcelona than they're used to over two legs. What does that prove ultimately? Well, nothing, because Newcastle didn't get through. Newcastle had to find a way of attacking because, they couldn't sit back and defend a lead. They didn't have that lead. I think they had to have a go, and they did have a go. I think the problem is that the way the game panned out did affect them, and they conceded not only bad goals, they conceded unfortunate goals, certainly for the first one, I would argue, and unfortunate goals in terms of timing. And I think by the end of the match, they're just dead on their feet, their legs have gone. And so I think then in retrospect, you can say, okay, they should have conserved energy. But if you take a step back and look at how the game stood before kickoff, you would say it was always going to be difficult for Newcastle to get through. They're playing an exceptional team, an exceptional club who've done it before. They had a go and they gave themselves a chance. If they hadn't had a go and gone out, I think we'd be asking questions. It's just that the way that they ultimately failed was so spectacular.
Yeah.
We're then in danger of rewriting history. It's not the setup that failed. It's pretty basic defending that failed.
Sadly, Chris, we shot ourselves in the foot a lot more times than we shot at Barcelona's goal, didn't we?
That was what was so annoying about the first half, was that Newcastle worked hard to get their opportunities, and you can say that it's partly down to Barcelona's own deficiencies because they play that high line, but they always play that high line. That's the way that they play it. But Newcastle were getting in behind it, managing to usually stay onside and looked a real threat. But at the other end, so the first goal, I mean, I was trying to do our extra time podcast, and for once I didn't try to describe every single goal, mainly because even I couldn't remember every single goal that had gone on in such detail. I was trying my best at certain points, but basically, if you look at each of the goals, certainly for five of them, but possibly even for all seven, there are sort of basic errors, some of them more unfortunate than others. Yeah. The pitch had been watered a lot, and in the build-up to the first goal, Malik Chow and Lewis Hall both slip over, which creates the gap, which eventually allows Rafinha to score. To concede two set-piece goals is criminal against Barcelona away. Newcastle, I was so frustrated with them, their set pieces at St. James's, in attacking sense, that they had opportunities. They had so many of them and didn't take any of them. They were wasteful again with them at Camp Nou. And then they concede two against Barcelona, against a side who have so many attacking weapons as it is. Premier League is, or this season, everything's been about set pieces. And yet Newcastle concede two from that. And that is
Newcastle are a big team, you know, and a physical team. It's being done like that. It's just a gift. It is a gift.
Howe described it as unforgivable, and he's right. And the second half, the mistakes with Emi Malik-Chau, having been excellent at Chelsea, had a very, very difficult evening, but he was not the only one. I think every single person was culpable. Dan Byrne didn't have a very good evening. Kieran Trippier was awful in the first half. Tino Livramento came on and was arguably worse. I mean, you have to put the game situation into account there, that Livramento came on. They're already 3-2 down, they're 4-2 down within a few minutes. So, and the team basically lost their heads. And Howe spoke a lot afterwards about Newcastle psychologically having been affected by half-time. But I actually think it was the fourth goal that really killed them. When the fourth goal went in, it just felt like everything just went. As encouraging as 3-45 minutes were, the second half was alarming to be in that position, because it did feel at one stage, certainly when it was 6-2 and then went 7-2, you did feel Barcelona could make this anything they want to if they really. Every time Barcelona went forward, gaps were appearing, Newcastle were all over the place. That is very concerning, because to have gone from one of the most encouraging defensive performances of the season to the worst 45-minute defensive performance of the campaign, but then add in the fact they'd already conceded three goals in the first half, one of them a penalty from a decision to pull someone back. That is really concerning. And as Ollie reminded me yesterday, I had said after that Chelsea game that if Newcastle scored twice at Camp Nou, I think they win. Well, unfortunately, Barcelona responded with seven goals. Yeah,
great predictions of our time.
Yeah, well done. There were a couple of penalty decisions, Chris, wasn't there? Or non-penalty decisions that affected the game. What did we make of them?
Well, the Kieran Trippier one is hard to argue that it's not a penalty once you actually see it back, that he does pull Rafinha back. The frustrating thing is that, is Rafinha getting the ball? I think probably not. That's maybe why he doesn't actually get dismissed and it's only a yellow card that he's given, because if he was denying a clear goal-scoring opportunity, then it would have definitely been a red. At the other end, Alanga probably was pulled back by Cancelo, but I didn't think, the more I saw it, I didn't think it was an out-and-out penalty, really. He goes down quite easily. If it's given on the field, again, it's one of those where I don't think VAR necessarily intervenes, but I don't think VAR should intervene. I think that was Howe's frustration and Newcastle's frustration, is they're basically saying that you've overturned one. Is it clear and obvious? But I think that, in all honesty, the Barcelona one was more of a penalty than Newcastle's, even if I do get the frustration to a certain degree.
And George, Eddie Howe spoke afterwards about the team suffering emotional and psychological problems after half-time. I think we all did, didn't we?
Yes, I think we're all still suffering. I think a small dose of therapy might be good for all of us. Yeah, I mean, what he's referring to there, of course, is that the penalty and the Yamal goal that comes 7 minutes into injury time at the end of the first half. If it's 2-2 at half time, Newcastle go into that. They go into it buoyed. And of course, you know, you have that sort of huge, huge dent walking back to the dressing room. And then, of course, what do you want there? Okay, well, you need to keep it tight for the first few minutes of the second half. They then concede again after 51. So it's very soon into the second half. And then from that point, realistically, you're not going to come back. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be absolutely impossible. And then from that moment, it was heads gone, legs gone, everything gone. And it became very, very messy. And I think once you're sort of emotionally scarred like that, suddenly your legs become heavy. And against a team like Barcelona that is capable of just cutting through teams, suddenly you see their confidence go up a different level. So you've got those things happening at the same time. Barcelona are just having fun at that point. And, you know, you don't want to see that from your team. You don't want to see your team go to pieces in the way that Newcastle did. If there is, you know, if there is that bit of mitigation, they are playing against genuinely world-class footballers who, when they have time, when they have space, when they have given encouragement, can do pretty much what they want. I'm not attempting to explain away the terrible sort of individual errors that Newcastle made, but, you know, they weren't playing a pub team there. They're playing an exceptional team whose confidence grew and who have the talent to do what they want. But Newcastle, by that point, were all over the place, and it was a very ugly and difficult watch.
It certainly was. So where are we now, Chris? How are we feeling after that? Are we glass half full, glass half empty? Is the glass half full of piss, by any chance? What is it full of?
If it's half, if you're a glass half full person, but it's full of piss, then that would be worse than it being be worse.
I've always said that I'm a glass half full person, but unfortunately the glass is half full of piss. That's kind of
okay.
My outlook.
That confuses matters.
Yes. Well, where Newcastle are now is that they're out of all cup competitions now. They have 8 Premier League games remaining. They're currently 9th, but 7th certainly looks attainable. 6th, given Chelsea's form, I don't think is out of the question. 5th, they are 7 points behind Liverpool, I think, looks very difficult, but is not entirely impossible. So Champions League, they're probably not going to... This is probably the last time last game in the Champions League for at least a season,
yeah,
if not longer. The focus has to be on finishing as high as possible in the Premier League and immediately responding against Sunderland on Sunday. But it also feels like if we're casting this slightly further ahead, this may be the end of this phase of the takeover. Evolution needs to happen. We knew there was going to be significant changes in the squad this summer. You suspect the likes of Kieran Trippier's contract up, he's probably going to go. Rumours about Bruno Guimaraes, but I think, is that a negotiating tactic for his contract? We're still checking that out at the moment. Sandro Tonali, Anthony Gordon and Tino Livramento are the big ones who continue to be linked elsewhere and may go. I do think there's going to be significant squad churn. I think that the team will look very different come the start of next season. The core will still be there, but I think that there's going to be multiple ins and outs. Is the team built around Nick Voldemort moving forward? Does Yohan Wissa have a future at Newcastle, or do they just write that off? We know that they actually want a striker this summer to replace whom, we shall see. So I think, yeah, basically, this was almost a year to the day after Newcastle lifting the Carabao Cup, and I think that side, the core of that side, needs refreshing, needs changing, and Newcastle have to be ahead of that. They can't have another Alexander Isak saga this summer. If they are going to sell one or two of the big players to reinvest and change the squad, they need to make that decision early, get it done early, and be ahead of it. That is the key for this season. They can't have another destabilising summer because they've had two of those already.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that Chris has said there. I do think this becomes a really sort of fascinating moment. I mean, you know, obviously we feel it. You don't feel it in a sense of, ooh, this will be interesting. We've got Sunderland next, you know, like with just, you're straight into that. There's no let up, not for another few days. But then after that, of course, there's an international break. And then Newcastle go back for, not for very long, obviously, but they go back to one game a week. Now, this is the moment that we actually find, you know, is the one last hurrah for this team, for this version of the team. Eddie Howe's time on the training pitch, this is, you know, this is where he will finally have a bit of that. But it comes at the end of a season which has stretched them to breaking point. Yes, has, I mean, if you're talking glass half full, the first time in the Champions League round of 16, playing all these matches, getting to the semi-final of the League Cup, showing that they can compete, not particularly in the Premier League, but that they can compete. Can they end the season with momentum, looking strong back in Europe? Because I do think that's important. Now, like, it isn't going to be the Champions League. I mean, it's very, very unlikely to be the Champions League. But actually, I think for Newcastle's progress and for their development as a team and squad, getting back into Europe is really important. And getting back into Europe in a lesser competition, if we want to call it that, but where they have the ability to rotate, I've talked about this before, but where they have the ability to rotate every now and again, you know, bigger players can come out of the team and, you know, not be, I'm not saying, you know, not playing with intensity, but actually, if you change your team around more often, you have the ability to play with more intensity. You know, can they actually get to grips with playing in Europe? Because, you know, it's a tough thing to say, but it's like it's been difficult for them to manage that. They're not used to it. and they have to be better at it. And the only way you get better at it isn't by having a season off and then doing it again in the Champions League. It's by just doing it again season after season after season, but with an opportunity to make a few more changes here and there. I think it's really important that they do everything they can to get back into Europe and that they end the season with positive momentum.
So on to the Lasses, they carved out a 2-0 win against Birmingham. Birmingham had the better of the first half, but Jordan Nobbs' banger defied the run of play. The Lasses' captain has kept the campaign alive with a series of crucial and high-quality goals. Newcastle were actually a lot better in the second half, and a Beth Lumsden lob sealed it. Newcastle have now played the same number of games as second-place Birmingham and Palace, who are third, and Newcastle host Palace at the weekend. Right then, the under-21s. Newcastle under-21 side now has a new manager. Not the first time we've said that in recent seasons. Meet the new guy, same as the old guy. Chris, you were at the under-21s on Friday night and spoke to Robbie Stockdale. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Firstly, really proud, really. It's a very coveted role and a very important role at a huge football club. So to be given the responsibility with the rest of the staff to look after our young players and develop them and try and sort of bridge the gap for them for what senior football looks like. Yeah, I'm really pleased, and it's a position that I've done before. I've gone away, I've gained experience through all different types of roles. I've been a manager in the Football League, so I now come back into this role with probably a little bit more expertise of what it should look like and what the next level for the boys is.
Yeah, for once we don't have to ask you about what the situation is. Yeah. When did you find out, and what do you think you can really bring to the role? Why did you want the role so much?
Well, I found out early in the week, so that was pleasing. I think it's all about developing players, and you know, it's great for the team win. I actually think that the team needs to function properly for the individuals within that team to flourish. So that's important that we get the team ethic right. But it's about developing footballers, hopefully for our first team. If it's not for our first team, which is really difficult, by the way, because the first team are at such a good level, the next level of where we can put the players in is important for them to try and get careers or sell players, or however that looks. So I know what that level looks like. I've worked at that level. I've worked in the Premier League, right down to League Two. So I think that experience, if you like, can be beneficial for our young players as we try and push them through the levels of where they deserve to play.
Because the under 21 role can be, well, it is unique in that it's not the first team, it's below, and it feels like you can be pulled in lots of different directions. But the experience you have there, do you feel that's going to serve you well then?
I hope so, and I hope that's what the club see in the position as well. I suppose I see the 21s as like the last step of academy, so it shouldn't really look like the academy, but it doesn't look like first team as well. It's got to look somewhere in the middle, so there's got to have that feel about it whilst you're still developing the individuals within the team. And I think you can see over the last, six or seven games that the running power of the team has improved, because if they want to play for our first team, first of all, they've got to run up and down the pitch because we know the talented players. So that's where we had a start point, and then hopefully we can develop the technical and tactical bits as well.
And you mentioned two quality players scoring tonight. Sung Soo seemed to be one of his best all-round performances in some ways. Where's he at now with his development?
When Sung Soo first came in, physically he wasn't at the level of where we'd like him. So we look at that. We work within like our IDT, so the sports science department, medical department, and we tailor training sessions to build that up. And I think now you can see that he's still got a lot more to come. But in terms of where he's at, I think from where he started to where he is now, there's been a really good improvement. And I think there's more to come, which is the exciting bit. So where we get him to from now to the end of the season, we'll keep working hard, and then hopefully next pre-season, he'll come back into the building and maybe be around the first team for pre-season.
And final one for me, Vakhtang Saria scored his first goal the other day, his home debut today. He obviously came in and had a frustrating injury at the start of the season. Where's he at in terms of that now?
We're taking it slowly for me. He had a very significant injury, so that's important that we dip him in and out. We're trying to build up his game minutes. Obviously Sean coming down to play today hindered that a little bit, but Vakhtang will get good significant minutes from now to the end of the season. He's another really good quality player. At some stage they'll probably play together as well, so that'd be quite exciting to see. But at the minute it's a waiting game. He played 45 minutes in a behind closed doors friendly, 45 minutes at Leicester, and like you say, two games in a week was probably a stretch for him to do that again.
Yeah, so I think this has been the direction of travel for a few weeks. We've heard quite a bit from Robbie Stockdale in recent weeks and since Adam Lawrence departed as under 21 head coach to return to Manchester United, where he is now under 21 head coach there. And I think that this is the right move really for Newcastle. It's one of those ones where someone's been a caretaker, had a positive bump, so you do wonder, I suppose the Michael Carrick situation at Manchester United now, will he have the same effect if he continues full time, same with Glenn Rhoda at Newcastle United, I suppose, to a certain degree, back in mid-2000s. But I do think that you can see there's been a response from the players that they seem to like what he's brought. And I like the way that he deals with things. He's also experienced in this regard. And I don't see him as someone, and this is not to have a go at Adam Lawrence, but I don't see Robbie Stockdale being here as someone to think, oh, this is my next step onto a next job. And Newcastle have tried to do that with coaches. They've had Diarmaid O'Carroll go elsewhere. They've had Ben Dawson, who sort of tried to progress their careers, just like try to progress players. But I also think there needs stability. Steve Harper spoke about it a lot when I asked him after Newcastle played Sunderland at under 21 level. There just has been too much churn there. And Stockdale seems committed. He seems like he wants to be here. And so hopefully going forward, that's a positive. We also spoke very briefly after the game to Soo-Sung Park, who his English is he really bless him, because he came and he stood and he answered questions, and you can see he's just not very confident. He can't actually speak English, and he I think he's conversational pretty he speaks pretty well, but he's only 18, just turned 19 I think last week. He scored and got an assist, and it feels like he's starting to gain a bit of momentum there. It'll be interesting to see what the future holds for him too.
Right then, chaps, let's wrap things up with a bit of chat about the derby coming up on Sunday. Just what you need after you've gone out of Europe at the hands of Barcelona.
What was Thomas Kirkcannon's phrase about the derby?
Oh, I can't remember. I just wish it wasn't happening or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it. I just wish it wasn't happening, yeah. It's a big old game, George, isn't it? Not just in its own right and after Barcelona, of course, but because of what happened at their place in December.
Of course, and this is something I'm writing about for The Athletic, and so I'm gonna give you a theory. Now, I did give you a bad theory, I will admit, before the first derby. You know, had Newcastle outgrown it? Could there be, you know, can they think about other things now that they were a winning team, a winning club? And of course, the answer comes right back in the face like a sledgehammer. No, of course not. That this is still. A massive, massive fixture. Here's my theory for the head of the return game. Eddie Howe referred to Barcelona as the biggest game in Newcastle's modern history. Incorrectly, in my opinion. That's a different subject. But Newcastle are going from that to their biggest game of the season.
Yes.
That is a contradiction. But I think it's right, isn't it? I mean, I think there's... And obviously, one of those games does lead to another. You know, Barcelona is huge. It's about money. I mean, the amount of money that Newcastle have earned from the Champions League, all eyes on them, the prestige, the glitz. You're playing it in the new camp. It's where everybody wants to play. If it's a victory, then you can start talking about it. You know, Howe had talked about it being, you know, it would be the biggest win of his managerial career. But then, yeah, you go headfirst into a game that Newcastle just... cannot afford to lose. I think Chris would say cannot afford not to win. That actually very rarely for this Newcastle side there is a deficit from team to supporters that they owe their fans. Do they owe their fans after Barcelona? Ultimately, they're picked apart by a world-class team, but they held their own for a lot of that game and they had a go. What did Newcastle not do at the Stadium of Light? Have a go. They were so passive. It looked like damage limitation. It came back to bite them. And it makes this a massive, massive, massive game. They owe their fans a performance and a win. And I don't think that's something you can say a lot about Eddie Howe's time at Newcastle.
Chris, Newcastle have got to fight the fatigue, haven't they, and take some momentum into this break, which is coming up.
Yeah, similar to the game away at Stadium of Light. Newcastle played on the Wednesday night against Bayer Leverkusen, then played Sunderland on the Sunday. They play away at Barcelona, quick turnaround, and then play on the Sunday. I think it's almost emotionally how Newcastle need to recover. Physically, yeah, they'll be shot because they've played on that pitch for so long and tried to go toe-to-toe with Barcelona. But the way Newcastle psychologically seemed to just lose it in the second half, that is something that they need to pick themselves up from. Going forward, after the international break, they don't play the immediate weekend afterwards because that's FA Cup quarter-final weekend. They don't have a midweek Champions League game leading up to it. Palace game, if they progress in the UEFA Conference League, will even be moved to the Sunday. And Newcastle are going to have one game a week between now and the end of the season. No midweek matches unless there's rearrangements due to their teams progressing in their competitions. And so that should suit them going forward. The run-in looks fairly kind beyond, on paper at least, beyond having to go to Arsenal, or they do play at Bournemouth, who Eddie Howe doesn't beat in the Premier League, and they have to go to Palace, where they don't have a great record. But generally, Newcastle have a real opportunity to attack the Premier League. But to do that, I feel they have to win on Sunday. I slightly disagree with George on the second half against Barcelona. I do think they need to respond to that, because I think the manner of it was just so shambolic, regardless of how good Barcelona are, that I think it's both the response of what happened in December and that they need to respond for that. But they also just need to shake that off by winning on Sunday. The international break, that 3-week break, becomes so long and a period for negativity to build if Newcastle don't beat Sunderland. If they do win, then they may even be up to seventh by that stage, depending on other results, but they will be probably favourites to finish in one of those European positions if they win that game. And it just consigns last night a little bit, not to history, but at least it puts an exclamation point between it, and Newcastle have responded in positive fashion. It would then be three straight Premier League wins as well. It's strange that you say that, because Newcastle have been playing so many other competitions, and momentum within the Premier League has been stuttered all the way through the season, given their own inconsistency as well. But yeah, I think it's just massive. I think they have to respond with a win for so many reasons.
Yeah, I honestly don't really disagree with that. But I do want to come to you, Taylor, as well, because we've heard a lot from Chris and I about this. But I want your sort of take on how you're feeling ahead of this game. But obviously, I mean, yes, there is context from Barcelona. Yes, there's context from that. But really, in the light of what happened at the Stadium of Light in December, sort of how you feel about this game on Sunday.
It feels like there's a bit of unfinished business, doesn't there? I mean, it feels like we owe them one. I'm still raw. I'm still hurting a little bit from the game in December, I have to be honest with you. And I try not to put too much stock in these games because, you know, they don't come around that often. But when they do, you want to win them, you know. There's a lot at stake, not just... And I know it's petty. I know it's pathetic. But the bragging rights are a thing for fans. You know, they really are. And I've been taking pelters all week. I was taking pelters last night off a Sunderland fan who stood in the bar next to me watching us get demolished by Barcelona, who was saying, "I can't wait for Sunday now." And I was like, I fucking do not need this. but yeah, I'm as always, I echo Thomas Concannon. I wish we didn't have to play them. I really do. I would rather play anybody else in the world than Sunderland. But we do have to play them. And the thing is with this one, it comes at such a pivotal moment for the team where it could set the tone hugely for the rest of the season. It really could. A win could propel us up the league and could really make us feel great. A loss could have the opposite effect massively. And it's dangerous, isn't it? It's a dangerous moment, this, George.
It's a dangerous game, isn't it? I mean, that's what you would say. I mean, like, you know, you're putting it against Barcelona. The thing that I always love about the derby is the noise, the atmosphere. It's like you can feel that the air is heavy. I know people hate this as well, but like you get a feeling around the derby that you don't get for any other game, and probably for, you know, no other day in your life. You know, like working life, your professional life, personal life. It just doesn't happen. There's just a different feeling to it. It's laden. It has meaning and significance and history. I think it's interesting when you say that Newcastle owe Sunderland one, because I think I would flip that around and I say, really? I think it's the Newcastle team that owe Newcastle fans one.
Well, I would agree with that as well, yeah.
But I think that's the sort of interesting thing that if you... So, like, whether you go back over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, Newcastle didn't turn up in the first cup final. But that applied to Newcastle fans as well, because everybody was emotionally spent. By the time they got to Wembley, there was nothing more to give. And so that emotion was shared. Now, I know there's been like difficult moments this season. I know that Newcastle, you know, were booed off, or some people booed Newcastle off after recent matches against Brentford and Everton. But I think that was sort of, you know, that reflected a feeling of grumpiness and all these games and seeing the same mistakes happen time and time again. I think the Sunderland game stands out like a mile to me because it was the only time that I can think of that Newcastle's performance, setup, attitude and application was just on a different planet to what their own supporters would have expected as a bare minimum.
It's one of the only times in the last 3 or 4 years where I felt let down.
You feel let down. Yeah, exactly.
I did on that day. I felt let down on that day because there was so much behind it. There was so much emotion going into it. It was built up so much. I was convinced that everybody understood what it meant, including the players, the staff, everybody, the club,
yeah,
etc. You know, we had all of the big noise on social media. They made a huge deal of it. And then to go there and to produce that wet fart of a display, you feel like, come on, like, surely this doesn't just mean a lot to us. It means a lot to everybody.
Yeah, that's my contention. That's my thesis.
After the Barcelona game, the way that Howe spoke about it, the way that Anthony Elanga spoke about it, even the way questions were pitched at Howe, if you look at his NUFC TV interview, the question to him is, do the players and do you understand the sort of height, the magnitude of this game? And I think that Newcastle, it almost felt in December when they were speaking about it, it was also nonchalant, oh yeah, we do understand this. But Howe's tone was different. I felt he talked about the Newcastle having to play for their lives and that this is for the city and for the team. And I think that they did realise that certainly the performance was unacceptable, but also maybe the tone hadn't quite been right for what they then delivered. And so I do sense a subtle change there just in the way they're speaking about it. Still using similar words, but just in a slightly different framing. And now it's about making... I mean, Howe's got a press conference on Friday. He'll be asked a lot more questions about it. But he basically said after the Barcelona game, he said, I can say this, but it's about delivering on the pitch. So he knows that. He knows regardless of what he says beforehand or what anyone says beforehand, it only matters what Newcastle actually do on Sunday.
Just very briefly, if I can sort of sum up, the question that Chris and I asked before the first game was Sunderland the biggest game of the week, let alone the biggest game of the season? Because if you remember back then, it was a Champions League game. That's right. I can't remember what Champions League game it was, but it was a Champions League game leading up to it, and then there was a big game in the League Cup afterwards. And in the middle, you've got a game against their local rivals, yeah, but like a newly promoted team. It's like, okay, like if you're talking about priorities, that, you know, that game should just be really about taking care of business. That's what that game is. But you've got these massive games either side of it. And what the Sunderland game actually showed was, even if you don't think it's the biggest game of the season, yeah, you've got to fucking play as if it's the biggest game of the season. Yeah, you've got to look like it's the biggest game of the season. And you've got to go in with that. I mean, it's brutal, it's simple, it's not clever. You've got to go in and win the first tackle and set a tone. And Newcastle were the opposite. They were passive. They let Sunderland set the tempo. They let them set the agenda. And at the end of it, like, they looked so meek. And it's a tone-setting game. It can be a tone-setting game for the rest of Newcastle's season.
Yes.
It could be a tone-setting game for Eddie Howe. But you've got to set the tone in the game itself. You've got to win the ball. You've got to make a tackle. You've got to get the crowd on your side. It's so basic, but you've got to do it.
Chris, you have some reservations about Newcastle's recent tactics and how they will fare against Sunderland playing that way.
Yeah, I don't mean to end necessarily on a negative, but just I am fascinated to see how Newcastle approach this game, because if you think about what seems to have worked for them over the course of the last few weeks, generally has either been away from home or against sides who will give them space in behind to play in behind. But Anthony Elanga, Anthony Gordon, Harvey Barnes, if they start, are not going to have the space against Sunderland. You would suspect Sunderland are going to come and sit deep. Is Anthony Gordon even the right player to be playing centre forward in a game like that? We haven't seen whether that is the case yet, where he hasn't been able to prove that theory. And so it's going to be very different in that sense. And Newcastle are going to have to break down a low block, something we know they've struggled to do. And that's where, again, where they go in probably as favourites on the balance of play, they have to find a way. And so whether Howe changes things around, does Nick Voldemada or Johan Wisser come into the equation? I mean, both of them unused substitutes again at Barcelona. Johan Wisser barely seen for weeks now. you would have thought probably won't revert to him, but does Nick Voldemort come in the side without Sandro Tonali if he isn't available? Does Voldemort play in midfield again? So many questions, and Newcastle have to answer them, as well as the questions about the mentality and ability to get up for this occasion. Howe actually referred to it after the game to NUFC TV as the most important of Newcastle's league season. So he knows now that this is the match they have to deliver in.
There we go, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. If you are a fan of mental torture and want to listen to Chris and Luke chew over that Barcelona game yet again, subscribe at podonthetine.supportandcast.fm and have a listen to their Extra Tine episode from last night.
Just wait till Sunday as well. Just wait till Sunday. Yeah, if you like
more mental torture. Kind of yeah, if you're into that kind of thing, that's what floats your boat. Please get in touch with us at podonthetine@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky at podonthetine. Chaps, let's say something positive before we finish off today. George, let's have a message of positivity before we close off.
Well, I think Newcastle will turn up. I mean, I do think Newcastle will turn up on Sunday.
Good.
And they turned up against Barcelona, and I mean, look what happened. No, hang on. They did turn up against Barcelona, which does make it different to the first game at Sunderland. They have to turn up, and I think they will turn up. If I go back to that first cup final, which I did mention, it was like the second time it came around, everybody was focused on turning up. Fans, players, coaching staff, and they did. I think Newcastle will turn up on Sunday.
Chris?
Sunderland aren't in very good form. They don't score many goals, and so Newcastle have to take heart from that and make sure that they... I'm going to say it again. If Newcastle score twice, I think they'll win this game.
Oh my God, that's
7-2 to Sunderland. Hell. Brilliant. Thanks, Chris.
Safe journey home. I hope you get back all right. That's it. Thanks very much for listening from everybody at Pond the Time. We hope you have an enjoyable week. We'll speak to you on Derby Day. Take care. Goodbye.